in the early 50s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, you know, that they often...
Wagon with that horse what we had, and she keep going, but it couldn't go anymore.
Okay, why don't we go back and just touch on a few dates here, and Michael can help.
Okay.
Okay, so if we could just from a date standpoint, when you left Strasbourg in South Russia, when did that happen?
1944, March the 23rd, 9 o'clock in the morning. And we only made 10 kilometers. There was rain and snow until, well, we just slipped under the wagon like that. And then the next day, we drove to Frontsfeld. You know, that was about about 50 kilometers too, you know. And the horses, you know, it's impossible to go when it's rained and snow. And we had to feed them. We had to get straw and hay for them, but there was nobody there. In every town we came, everybody was gone already. Just the cats and the dogs was running around. And then from Frontsfeld, we went to Ackermann. And that's where the ferry should take us over to Romania, across that river. And seeing then it froze and it thawed and it snowed and it rained. And then the Russian had a good chance to bomb. So they always came with a defibrillator, you know, and just two bombs there. So people hold it back, you know. But we had to go over anyway, you know. But they brought little ferries, you know, but you couldn't take nothing with just what you had, your coat or your blanket or something.
So when you left, you really don't have any pictures or anything like that?
Everything gone, everything. Well, in the early days, they didn't take so many photographers like now. But once in a while, a photographer came around in the community and took a couple of pictures. But that stayed all behind. We just walked out, you know, with bread and smoked meat and stuff like that. There was no medication. There was nothing. And we didn't have shoes like we have shoes here now. So there was nothing.
Okay, and then when did you leave and when did you arrive in America?
I left, you mean from...
From Germany to come to America.
Oh, yeah, 1951 I came. See, October the 23rd, we went to the Bremerhaven, and the ship's name was Stuart, Channel Stuart. And we came, 9 days we were on the ocean. Then in the 2nd November, we came to New York. And in the 1st November, we came to New York. The 2nd, we got unloaded, and then we got, each one got his tag on where we go and stuff like that. And they give us $5. We didn't even know what to do with it. We couldn't buy. But in the train, we could get the food to eat and stuff like that, you know. And then I came in the 5th of November. I came to Bismarck. And that night, 5th of November, came right here to Hague.
And you were traveling with your daughter, weren't you?
Yeah. She was 6 years old. Yeah, yeah. And then she starts school here. And the sisters give her extra school so she learned the English right, you know, not... See, here the Germans, they talked English, but it wasn't right, you know. So the sister took her in and they teached her how, yeah. And then she graduated from high school and she married a farmer. She. Mm-hmm.
Did she help you learn English?
Huh?
Did she help you learn English?
I learned on my own. I had the radio going, and I knew how to write and read everything, you know. So I was what you call a bookworm. I love to read. And then I learned myself. So and Joe had a radio. You could get Yankton in South Dakota, Lawrence Welk, and stuff that... That's what I learned my English. A lot of people say, did you went to school? I said, yeah, I went to school, but a Russian school. Not. not English school. But one thing I regret, I should went spelling. See, the German spelling and the English spelling is different, you know. You lose so many syllables and then you add and on. And that when I write, I always have to have the dictionary so I didn't make a mistake. Yeah.
Could you describe a house in Strasbourg, your house in Strasbourg when you were a child?
Yeah, I could do it.
Yeah.
We had a nice home, and there was what you call like a Fiedelstube, a front room, and a side room. Well, Ma used to sleep in the front room, and we girls, and then in the middle was the kitchen, and the entrance came, and then there was a big, we had two rooms at the back, one for Joseph, and one of the younger girls was sleeping. And behind that was the barn. There was the chicken coop and the two cows we had and the little pigs we had. And I would say that was about 75 feet this way. And it had a stone, sunstone, the entrance, the gable used to be with stone, you know. And was a mower around with stone all the way. And in the end where you come in, where there you put your ash in, your dress and stuff like that. And on the way down, we had a garden, oops garden, you know, all kinds of apples and plum and peaches and all that stuff. And what they used to call Helmhit, you know, what we had the straw and the oats in for the cows and for the horses we had. But then later on when communists took over, we couldn't have it. Just one cow. That's about it.
Now, I've seen, when I've visited over there, I've seen a lot of the houses have summer kitchens.
Oh, yeah, summer kitchen, yeah. And the keller, the cellar, where you went down and got all. Ours was about 10 feet down, 10 steps down, where we had all our watermelons and apples and sauerkraut and cucumbers and everything for the winter that we had all down there. And like to smoke meat, we hung up in the attic, you know. And we made our own fruit, cut apples and pears and grapes and laid it on the roof and let it dry. And then we put it in sack and hung it. And then we made compote, you know, where they cooked it like like fruit.
Did you have one of those ladders that went up to the attic?
Yeah. We had one steps way up, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about the summer kitchen. What would you do in the summer kitchen?
Well, nobody wanted to clean the big house, you know, over the summer. There was kind of flies, too, around, you know. So we had the summer kitchen, and there was the big bokofer beside there. You baked your bread in there and everything, and you eat in the summer kitchen. But then you only went to sleep in the big house. So that's why we had the summer kitchen, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the well was beside there. We dug the well. It was about 20 feet deep, a well, and we had where you got the water out, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, my memory is that the houses were, like, long and narrow.
Yeah, narrow, yeah. And you know when the war was, I forgot to mention that, before the German came, Russia made us all paint our houses black with ash, the whole houses, so the Germans couldn't see where the village are. That's what they told us, you know. And we had to take, it's almost like ash, wood ash you had, and mix it with water, and then you took the brushes and had to spray there. And the houses, you know, well, we always smeared our house, you know, with lime and stuff, and then we painted it white. But it took forever to get that off. That it looked terrible. When you got out at night, you couldn't see nothing. But the Germans were in town already. And so why? Yeah, but that's the way they did, the communists, you know.
Now, when we were over there, when we visited over there, actually the houses right now are pretty colorful.
Oh, yeah.
Were they colorful when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. We had flowers around. And like in Germany, they have the geraniums on the window, and that's we had too, yeah. A lot of flower gardens, you know, raised our own flowers and stuff. And the vegetables and the fruit, like the apples and pears, the Jews came out from Odessa in spring, and they contract you garden, whatever you had, and there's so much you get, all you have to do, deliver it to them in time, you know, and that's the way we got rid of our, but they were good to us, you know, there was no problem with them, you know.
And did you have fences in front of your house?
Yeah, a mower, what they call it, around, yeah. Mm-hmm. And even like, come Saturday, we had to sweep the yard, everything had to be cleaned up, no shovel out, no rain out, nothing outside, you know.
Yeah. Where was your house in relation to the church in Strasbourg? How close were you to the church?
Oh, maybe up down to the fire hall, down here, not two blocks maybe, yeah. And we walked. And then later on, they got the bikes, you know, had some bikes, you know, and the boys ride it with the horses and stuff, but mostly where we walked. Well, there's some people, like, come from 20, 30 miles to church yet, and then they took the shoes out and walked barefoot till they come to church, and then they put the shoes on again, and then they took them out again to save the shoes, because we only had one pair of shoes, one kid from the other one.
Now, when we were in Strasbourg, I think the school was about two blocks, I would say, east of the church.
Right.
Was that the same school?
That was the same school, yeah. And the first teacher I remember was Schiller. He was from Germany. Him and his wife teach school there, but then they took him away too, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what would you have done for fun? What sort of games would you have
played? Oh, we danced and we sang and we paid tricks to each other too, you know, and stuff like that. And like in fall, you know, when like here we said Thanksgiving, we had Fasnacht, you know, we had a big dance and stuff like that, and put different clothes on, make him, like when a couple got married, you know, stuff the man and the wife, they laid in the bed, stuff like that. That's kid stuff, you know. But it was fun. It was fun. And each group had her a leader, you know. He could play the organ or the violin, and a lot of singing is the most important what we had down there. Our choir in our church had 60 singers, yeah. And our Schulmeister, what they call him, Schulmeister, was Ferdinand Kraft. And I don't know, Michael, you know that the Kraft from Strasbourg had a store, and that was his uncle. Mm. Yeah. So we had the choir, you know, and everything Latin, we had to sing, everything Latin, you know. But then just like in Christmas, you sing Stille Nacht or Komm Christkindlein, that was in German. But the other one was all in Latin, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you meet your first husband?
We were just almost neighbors, yeah. Went to school together and stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what would your wedding have been like? What would be a traditional wedding season in the village in Strasbourg?
Oh, 3 days. 3 days. The first day, you know, they had it in the house where the bride was, you know. And they didn't send card outs like they do now. They had Lord Model and Ehrenvater. So they drove around with the horses and the buggy, you know, and they said, well, you are invited to the wedding to so-and-so, you know, and the church. And so they went from house to house, whatever. And then when the dinner was done, was always with noodle soup and chicken, ketchup sauce, goulets, you know, that, you know what I mean, pig's feet, yeah, and salad and kuchen, you know, and wine, you know, they said it with a pitcher on the table. And then when they all had a good time, when they cleaned out the Hinnerstube, where the beds were in, and then the dance start. And, you know, that time there was ground floor, there was stuff, everything, but they danced and drank their wine, and then when they eat supper, they stole the bride, so the bridegroom had to pay to get his bride back too, you know. That was a lot of fun too, but he had to pay, but the money get back to him and her, you know, stuff. And then the next day they cooked a big kettle of vegetable soup. and all the stuff what was left. Then everybody could come and had a good time. You know, they danced almost 3 days, you know. So, but it was fun. It was fun, yeah.
Would there have been a honeymoon like we have here?
No. They had whatever that little house what they had saved for them or what they wanted to do, they moved in and started working. There was no honeymoon, no. And there was no divorce, nothing, except we not even knew nothing about that, you know.
I was wondering, would you have been able to see a movie over there when you were a kid? Did you ever go to movies, motion pictures?
No. We not even. All of what we learned in the school, in the paper, but nothing. There was no newspaper, no nothing. But later on, when Stalin got in, you know, the propaganda, you know, they came, you know, they drove around in the yard and all over and had a loudspeaker and say, you know, we have to vote for Stalin, you know. And there was old people who couldn't understand. And how can you vote for somebody else? His only name was on, so you had to vote for him. And they had always somebody still looking over your back, you know. If you didn't vote, and then you know what's coming for you.
Would there have been radio, communist radio stations then?
No. Nothing.
So did you even know there were things like motion pictures?
No, nothing. Well, all was we, from the library, you got people send some books in, you know, but that's all. We didn't know there what's going on outside.
So no letters from America?
No. Until when the war broke out, you know, when they started, you know, but when Hitler took over and then. But I know when I think the Russia were not even ready because they not even knew, you know, what's what, you know, but they start way up in the Volga, you know, when they took those people first out, they knew more than we do. But down here, we in by the Black Sea, we didn't know much, you know. Yeah.
So, when you said you'd gone to Odessa, but there must have been a point when you couldn't go any longer.
No, we couldn't. We only could go so much, maybe 2 kilometers out of the Dorf, no other place.
Mm-mm. So this would have been in the 30s.
Yeah. And even like, you know, they came and. You know, they said, "What are you thinking about? We should raise some money, so stuff like that. And if you say you'd have any money, well, it's good for you when you know what country do. So you better give what you have." And like they came, they took everything what we had. They had a loaf of bread in the cupboard. They took that one out. Everything, nothing left.
And you were old enough that you really noticed there was a difference, didn't you? Between when you were younger and...
Oh, yeah. I said, too, you know, like, we did everything on our own. Like, we made our clothes, or we had our clothes made by the Schneider, you know, and stuff like that and everything. Communists had nothing. They wouldn't, let's say, they wouldn't lose, but I don't know why they... But I think people said they knew that war was going to come, you know. That's why they want to give us down. So, like Stalin said, well... If you want to live, you go to collective, or not, you're going to die. And that's what people laid on the street, and they're blowed up like that, starved.
Now, we had talked a little bit earlier about you were able, fortunate enough to get over to America and the United States, but some of the people left Strasbourg weren't as fortunate as you were.
Well, see, that the problem was when the war ended and America and those four countries killed the war, they gave Russia where that spot was, where all those people who traveled, and he unloaded them right there back in the trains and took them back to Siberia. And each one got 20 years of labor, hard labor. See, that's what we found out now from relatives who come to Germany, from Russia to Germany. But me, my mom, we went away through my aunt, you know. We weren't in that group, but the other ones, there was not not just Strasbourg, that was all the Germans. They said they loaded trainloads and trainloads and trainloads and took them all back. And they said, you were the enemy of the Russian, and that's what they did. And they all, but now there's a lot of them in Russia. They are in Russia, but not all can come out of Germany, because it's almost, well, it's almost 50 years. They have maybe kids up there, and so I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to go out. I don't know.
When you're growing up in South Russia, did you think of yourself as German or as Russian?
A German, oh yeah. But see, through the First World War and the Second World War, he couldn't speak German. No, he couldn't speak German. No way. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So Russian was almost your first language?
Yeah, but among us and at home we talk German. But when you go to like to the in the government office or stuff like that, you had to speak. You have to speak Russian. Yeah, and they brought all those peoples in, you know, from different places to show us how to live in the kolkhoz, what they call collective, you know, and stuff like that. And that was no, you couldn't speak a word German. Mm-mm.
Have you ever run into, met anyone who left Strasbourg when you did? Have you ever?
Yeah, when I was in Germany, yeah. I had a couple of cousins who made it out too, yeah. Mm-hmm. They lived in, used to live close by Stuttgart, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you came here in the 50s then, and you settled in Hague and Strasbourg, North Dakota area, did some of the food seem similar to you, the foods that the people were making and eating that they call German-Russian food? Was this food?
Yeah, but not compared to the German food. Not compared to the German food. Like the people I worked for, they eat a lot of pork and stuff like that, and they cook a little different, you know. But here, too, you know, they switched, I don't know, when, like with the language, too, you know, like, say, washing dishes, and in German, say, spiel das Geschirr, you know. So, and then it's a different, you know, a different language what they had, you know. But the food, I don't know. I like the German food, you know. And they drink, I don't know when you were over there, to drink that apple cider, Apfelsaft, stuff like that. That's what we used to drink here, yeah. And they, like in Germany, they make their own whiskey, you know. They burn their, they have their fruit all, they make their own whiskey. And when I was with these people, they had, see, when Germany gave up, you know, there was, and then the Russian, they have so many, American had so many black guys there, and they came and they got those whiskeys from those people, you know. and they just went like that, you know. They didn't know what it is, those black soldiers, you know, stuff like that, you know. But we have a hard time that time when the American came in. We had to wear old clothes and smear our face up. They raped a lot of girls and stuff like that. We had to be really careful.
When you look at the German foods that we serve here, or they have at the Hay Cafe or the church, mm-hmm. are there some things that you would have made in Russia? Are there?
That's what we, yeah. That's the Russian food what we made, like cheese button or the strudels or, yeah, or potato salad or nipple soup. That's the real food, yeah. That's the real food, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you would have had nipple soup over in Strasbourg?
Yeah. A lot of nipple soup, yeah.
What?
And we made our own sausage, you know, blutwurst and Schwarzenegger and all that stuff, you know. Yeah.
What was your favorite meal when you were a younger child? What would have been your favorite meal?
I want to tell you what my mother learned me. I didn't like schnitzel and noodles, you know, those noodles. Those fat noodles with potatoes in, I never liked it. And she said, Helena, you got to eat that. That's all what you have. And I was sitting out on the steps with my little dog, and the other three kids were in, and they eat their noodles and stuff like that. She came out, and she took that bowl and hit me over the head with that noodle, and the dog started licking the noodle up. She said, now you know how this. We poor, we cannot afford it. And to this day, I just don't go for the spinning and noodle. I just get lost. But that's the way my mom was, but that was all right, you know. Hit me over the head.
Would you have been had, as a child growing up, would there have been any sweets that you would have been able to get?
Well, that time there was nothing about ice cream. We didn't know about ice cream. We had our crepes and all stuff, different stuff, and we made our homemade candy and stuff, but no ice cream, no. And hell, we came to Germany, and then they call it ice, and then we got ice, yeah.
How about Christmas or Easter traditions?
Oh, that was great, you know, that Easter's, it's about Christmas too, you know, but we had no Christmas tree. We went out and cut a dry branch off and took it in the house, colored some onions and little paper, colored paper and popcorn rolls, and hung it. That was our Christmas tree. And then the Christkindl came, you know, and, well, we all had to sit in the row, you know. Well, was she good? Was he bad? Yeah, there's peace and there's good, you know. So we got a little, she had a little thing and she hit us a little bit. And Ma was standing behind the Christkind, and she held a doll or whatever she had to give us, you know. And that was the Christkind, you know. And then we had, you know, like ham and potato salad and wine and stuff, you know, baked our own cookies, you know. Yeah, strudels, rolls, and stuff like that. We did it all our own, yeah.
And how about Easter tradition?
And Easter, too. Easter was... The whole week, the Holy Week was, you know, and I don't know, I said, I remember like when Good Friday, when they put Christ in the tomb, and the mass service had to stay, posted there for a couple of hours. Every 4 hours they got Haben gewacht im Heiligen Grab, you know, and 3-4, you know, then they changed it again, and that was real nice too. And then we colored some eggs, we dug little houses beside the house and put little green grass in, and then the Osterhase, you know, what they call the Easter Bunny, came, and Ma went out in the early days, and she always put them in there, so... Yeah, that was nice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're doing another documentary on the iron crosses in the cemeteries that you see, like in the Hague Cemetery.
Yeah.
Did you see anything like that when you were growing up with her?
Oh, yeah. And my dad made his own iron cross when he died. He had it made, yeah. Not as fancy as the one you see now, but I remember when he died, we put it up. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So were the iron crosses common then?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of blacksmithing, and they wanted something to do, and they did fancy work, you know. Now, I wanted to tell you something quick with this in there when the revolution started, you know, and I don't know. It's one of those books from Dr. Haidt. You know, and they rounded all up some rich people, you know, and they took them all to cells, you know. They took them out of Litways in the prairie, and it was a valley. And it was 120 people. One lady was with two from Strasbourg, the other one from Franzfeld, and from a Fuder, you know, Fischer Franz. And they took them all, and a priest was in between those people, and they shot them all. And that priest got up and give the blessing yet. And I bet to this day there's not a one grass growed in that spot. There was just like a bloodbath in that valley. That was in cells, that happened in cells, you know. That's the way they got the people, you know.
Now, would that have been below cells or?
Out. It was in cells territory, but
okay.
They took them out in the fields, you know, and then they rounded them up. They were all kind of rich people and stuff like that, and they rounded them up, and they said, and even we went, as young kids, we went up and seen it, and it was brown. There was nothing grow there.
Now, when we go and visit the villages, we see things that are very unusual for, I think, Americans to see, things like the common area for the cows.
Uh-huh.
when you were growing up, I mean, was there a common area where the cows would come, people would come to milk the cows?
Well, you mean your own cows or the... Well, see, we had cows when we in the earlier days, but there was a key hut, what you say, the one who took the cows in the morning out in the pasture, and in the evening he brought them back. And each cow knew her way to go to the yard, and then we milked the cow, tied her on the next morning. The key hut, you know, he came, and we let your cow go and to go out, yeah.
Yeah, see, now in the villages, especially the bears on at noon, they all come together around the well.
And there were big wells, you know. They took them around, and then they drink, and then they milk the cows there. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have anything, Michael?
No, she said you remember when you came to Hague here.
Mm-hmm.
Were you speaking? How did you learn? These people, were they speaking English or German?
That time, they hardly knew any English here. Hardly, no. They all, the church was German. And then later on, it switched, you know, in the 60s, it switched everything to English, you know. And there was a lot of farm kids out there who came in the Hague school. They didn't know English. They had to learn them. You know, they spoke German all the way. Yeah, oh yeah, they were. And a funny thing, you know, the way people are, there was a couple of ladies, they always think they were a little bit buff, you know. And I was home once, and Joe and his wife, they went someplace, I don't know. And then they came, and they knocked at the door, and I said, come in. And then they said, we are so-and-so, they said their name, and we came, we want to see you. If you are so frappish wie mir. If they want to see if I are just a woman like they are. In that time, they still here had no permanent in the hair, and I had permanent. So they didn't want to see if you are so frappish wie mir. It was comical.
Did you get a German newspaper home?
Yeah. Joe had a Herald. The Dakota Herald, and Joseph Splittle, they used to call that, was a Catholic. Yeah, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I had, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is religion an important part of your life? I mean, you had it when you were a child, and then you sort of lost the daily religion? And...
No, not really, you know. I always preach to my girls, you know, talk about, keep this old tradition up, like go visit your friends, and don't say, I come tomorrow or when I'm done. Go now when you want to go, or visit your mother, or stuff like that, or teach them that, or teach them that. Don't let them forget the way, you know, and they're doing pretty good so far. They're doing real good. Yeah, I had five of them who went to college, and then somebody said, well, how come you send them? And I said, I don't want them to have a hard life like I had, but... they still can go back, whatever they want to do, but let them, you know, have a good education.
Were your children interested in your life? Did they ask a lot of
questions? Oh, yeah. They ask me a lot of questions. And the little ones, too, this one said to her mom, how come Grandma talks so funny English? Because my accent, you know. How come Grandma talks so funny English, you know? And then she said, well, Grandma came from Russia and then to German and then came over here. Yeah, that's it. So now they know, you know.
I would think they're pretty proud of Grandma, don't you think?
Yeah, they do. Special Sundays, they come on with after church, karma rules. And so one day I didn't get them right. I didn't put enough karma on, and my friend is the youngest one. I don't know, Ma, you lost your touch. And I said, no, I didn't have enough cream. So... So, and the kids, they tease each other, and now, like I said, I had a good time and a bad time, but I went a lot through, you know. Like my son, the youngest one, if you have time, he was a welder, you know, and he worked down in Eureka for a welder. And he was on top of a big truck and wanted to move a tank. and touch the wire. And he thought that wire hits the man who sit in the truck. So he jumped down and wanted to save that man. And that wire just fell down at him. He lost his leg here, and he got no toes in here. But he's a farmer, and he has five kids, and he owns the Elweiler, and he runs half hake and everything. Then I lost Caddy. Then I had the one girl who got hurt with the lawnmower, lost her eye. So different stuff, but I said, I'm still lucky. I'm still lucky.
What about Helen? Those, you know, from Strasbourg, many were sent to Siberia.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's interesting for us to know. Did you ever have correspondence with any of
No,
people?
No. Even when I talked to my sisters in Germany, you know, they couldn't get no answer, no contact, nothing with them. Once in a while when one came out from Siberia now, but they're not from us, from the Strasbourg area.
So you haven't met anybody?
No.
Nobody's corresponding with you?
No. Yeah.
Do you still write letters in German?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. To my sisters, yeah. Both of them, yeah. Yeah, I do. I always said I want to go home one more time, but then had a colon cancer surgery, so I pushed that out. And then 3 years ago, I had a valve replaced. So I said, one more year, but now the Muslim put a thing in, so I don't know if I'm going to make it one more time or not. So I hope so. I don't know.
Well, sometime we ought to see if we can get the pictures we took of Strasbourg and that area. We have some 3 years ago, Michael, went over and we took some pictures.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. Yeah.
I told her I would send her the map that one. Eugene Schwan, Eugen
Schwan. Uh-huh.
I'm sure you don't remember them, but they were all living when you were there.
Yeah, there was a lot of them there. There was the Kraft and the Sanger and all them, but it's a long time ago,
yeah.
You know, and
well,
I was young that time,
the
too.
Boshes. They were from Strasbourg, they were from Tundle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just about out of tape on this one. Well, that was super. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is very interesting.